Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. Most of us probably don't care to admit that we have fears about the difficulties we might encounter that are common to the aging process. Yet, as was covered in the previous program about driving, many fear having to give up the keys at some point. Today's articles describe what are most frequently cited as worries or fears associated with aging. From the Daystar Retirement Village's free caregiver guide, Understanding Elderly Parents, Seniors, Top 10 Fears of Aging by Melody Morris. This was posted on April 8, 2019. And while the intended recipient of the article is the child of an aging parent, the issue presented are ones that absolutely all of us can relate to. So, most were found in other articles, but are presented most concisely here. And then from the Mission Health Services, an interesting piece on the history leading up to current issues regarding nursing homes and why elders might be reluctant to reside in one. It was written by Heather Reynolds, March 6, 2019. And we begin with Understanding Elderly Parents, Seniors' Top 10 Fears of Aging. One of the keys to understanding parents as they age is to get a grasp on the things that worry them. Parents may not talk openly about these things, but you can be assured that they are thinking about them a lot. A recent study conducted for the Home Instead Senior Care Network identified the top 10 things seniors fear most. Knowing the most common fears can help open the discussion with parents about their concerns. And they are briefly just listed: loss of independence, declining health, running out of money, not being able to live at home, death of a spouse or family member, inability to manage their own activities of daily living, not being able to drive, isolation or loneliness, strangers caring for them, or fear of falling or getting hurt. And now we will look at each of those in detail. Loss of independence. We spend our whole lives learning to be independent and take care of ourselves. The thought of turning that responsibility over to others is frightening. Remember when you couldn't wait to turn 18 because you'd legally be independent of your parents? That independence is something we all cherish because it's the core of living life on our terms. As parents age, or as we do, begin to see the independence slowly slipping away as their cognitive or physical health deteriorates. It's essential that they keep as much control over their lives as possible, so always try to ask if you can help or offer options instead of making major decisions for them. For example, instead of saying, "Don't change that light bulb, you might fall," ask, "Would you like me to check or change any light bulbs?" You can also frame your assistance in the form of a gift by printing gift certificates for 5 kitchen cleaning sessions, yard work, or similar tasks that they may be worried about not being able to do on their own. By reassuring them that you enjoy helping will reassert their independence for as long as possible. And a reader interjection here, I would love it if somebody offered me 5 kitchen cleaning sessions. Going on now to declining health. Your aging parents see their physical condition deteriorating. They wonder how much longer they'll be able to do things they enjoy. Declining health, of course, goes hand in hand with the loss of independence and is often a tough subject to talk about. Parents may reach a point where they need daily assistance with personal care or can no longer safely maintain their home, but resist help because they fear they'll lose their independence or home. Your best bet for defeating the anger of aging is to research options and have a candid talk with folks about the results you found. The Institute on Aging reports 91% of seniors have one or more chronic conditions, so parents' declining health is not isolated. Physical limitations increase with age, and 65% of seniors requiring long-term help rely on family and friends. Another 30% use paid assistants, so you should determine what they need now and may need in the future and plan accordingly. Check local resources and insurance policies and discuss their health care needs and possible future needs so that they don't have to worry about what ifs. Running out of money. Many seniors fear running short of funds. Even those who have been prudent and wisely put aside funds sometimes worry that they won't have enough. Worry about what will happen, the burden it could put on loved ones. It's often hard for seniors to talk about money, but you can ease into the conversation slowly. Make sure that their basic expenses are covered, then gradually open the discussion to their long-term financial plans. One conversation opener is to ask how they'd like their affairs handled if they become incapacitated, to broach the subject. Make a detailed budget with your parents to reassure them of their financial security. Factor in monthly expenses such as food, utilities, housing, as well as optional expenses for such as travel and hobbies. Don't forget savings and emergency money for vehicles, home repair, and similar big-ticket items that may need to be purchased in the future. Once you have expenses and savings covered, look at Medicare comprehensive supplementary plans and determine what they can afford compared to what is covered. The cost of health care can cause financial hardships, so planning in advance for a possible medical emergency will ease the worry of running out of money. Not being able to live at home. Most seniors' home is much more than the house they live in. It's a place packed with memories. It's familiar, it's safe, and it's a huge part of their identity. Like most fears, talking about the subject will help alleviate the stress. Discuss future options such as hiring a live-in companion, downsizing, and senior housing. Be sure to listen carefully to your parents' options and their opinions about those options. Help them research their options, explore the cost of care, and define housing options rather than demand that they downsize and move. Your county will have a senior resource division where you can get information on various options. Get a list of local providers for in-home help, live-in companions, and similar programs that will help parents stay in their home. Research retirement and assisted living communities in your area and take a tour of the three that your parents like best. Remind them that they are looking at options, not planning a move. Once they understand the different possibilities for various scenarios, they won't have to worry about the unknown and what the future might bring. Death of a spouse or other family members. The older our parents get, the more their friends and relatives they see passing on. In addition to being a reminder of their own mortality, there is a genuine sense of loss of relationships. It's harder to build lasting relationships at an advanced age. Most seniors worry more about losing a loved one than they do about their own death, and fearing the loss of a caregiver can be extremely stressful. Discussing the possibility is the best answer because it allows your parent to look at the future more objectively. The best way to bring this up may be to talk about your own mortality. Make a will and a living will and let them know your wishes if you were to become incapacitated or die. This will open the discussion of their own plans and let them talk about what worries them about losing a spouse or family member. Inability to manage our own activities of daily living. Perhaps nowhere is the loss of independence so acutely felt as in the ability to perform normal acts of daily living, such as eating, dressing, and bathing. Older adults fear losing control of their lives and requiring help in those areas as an unwelcome reminder of that. It's important that your parent continue to do as much as possible, even if it takes twice as long. Mental and physical activity is also vital because it lessens dependence, so look for senior yoga classes and similar activities that will help a parent build strength. Activities of daily living, or ADLs, are one of the things that we all take for granted until we can no longer do them. If you've ever had a surgery or injury that makes it hard to do something simple, such as brush your hair or shower, you can imagine how hard it is to lose that ability permanently. Let them know that it's sad, but no big deal, and help them to find a solution if the problem becomes too much to handle alone. Again, there are home care aides that visit specifically to help with ADLs, so there's always an answer to a problem. Not being able to drive. Giving up the car keys is a severe blow to seniors. It's one of the acts of independence that they have to forfeit. Oh, that's a tough one to think about. No longer free to come and go as they please, but have to depend on others. Remember the freedom you experienced the first time you got the car keys in your teenage hands? That's the independence they fear losing. If it's no longer safe for your parents to drive, you should make sure that they have reliable transportation, even if it's just for a spur-of-the-moment Sunday drive. Perhaps the best thing to do in this case is to reassure them that it's no big deal. Most communities have shuttles for seniors so that they can still shop, go to appointments, and enjoy recreational activities. Find the options available in your family and your community and help your parents segue into a non-driving lifestyle. If they must rely on a shuttle service, offer to join them for the first few trips until they are comfortable going alone. If they need to rely on family members, make a calendar with a clear rotation of appointments so that everyone is on board with who needs to drive them where and when. Isolation or loneliness. We've already mentioned that it's increasingly hard to establish new relationships, and being alone increases feelings of being unwanted. Likewise, losing the ability to drive heightens the fear of isolation or loneliness, and both can lead to depression. Whether it's rotating family members' visits or a network of neighbors, it's important that seniors get out and about and socialize regularly. Look for activities at the nearest senior center and check your county's senior resources for activities and social events that they may enjoy. Remember, walking into a new group or senior center may feel awkward, so it's a good idea to go with them for the first few times. Most senior centers offer periodic trips to local sites and events, so go over the calendar with your parents and choose one or two day trips that you can enjoy together. By the end of the second trip, they may feel comfortable with the group as a whole and most likely will have struck up a friendship with one or more of their fellow travelers. Strangers caring for them. We all generally prefer to be around familiar faces. Having a stranger provide care, especially for intimate needs, is extremely uncomfortable. While having a family member as a primary caregiver may be ideal, it isn't always feasible. So if your parents need outside help, you should vet the person carefully and make sure a family member is present until you're sure your mom or dad is comfortable being alone with them. Listen carefully to any concerns your parent has and don't discount their or your instincts if something feels off. If you're thinking of using a company that provides service, verify that they do background checks on all employees, and if you're hiring someone independently, make sure that you check their references thoroughly and don't hesitate to have a background check done before you let them in your parents' home. Remember, just because someone is qualified doesn't mean they're a good fit. Plan to have family member present for the first few months the aide visits. By then, you will seem like a friend and your parent won't be stressed by being alone with a stranger. And finally, fear of falling or getting hurt. Most seniors know that they are not as sure of foot as they once were. They know that if they fall or otherwise injure themselves, that it would impact their ability to do things on their own. Ironically, the most valid fear comes in at 10th place in senior concerns because the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, states that 1 in 3 seniors has a fall each year. This is the most likely fear to come true. Many falls can be prevented, so install handrails, remove slipping hazards such as rugs, and take as many other precautions as possible. Check medications for side effects that may cause dizziness and keep on top of your parents' health. Take a good look at your parents' home. Is there a clutter that might be tripped over? Are the stairs well lit? Is the floor slippery when wet? Does the porch ice up in the winter? There are many simple preventive measures that you can take to make sure a parent or you don't fall. Here are a few. Install grab bars in the shower, tub, and next to the toilet. Reinforce existing handrails on all stairs and steps. Place anti-slip strips on all steps. Increase lighting in problem areas. Hire a neighbor to shovel and salt porches and walkways. It's important to understand the fears our aging parents might face. Many of the myths of senior living can often be dispelled, but often fears grow bigger when they are not vocalized, and so it's important to discuss them in an informal conversation. You don't have to talk with them about these things all the time, but it can help temper your reactions when you better understand why they sometimes react the way they do. Remember when Mom used to check the closet because you were afraid there was a monster waiting for you to fall asleep? Well, those fears can be your parents' monsters in the closet. And now we're going on to Why Do We Fear Nursing Homes from the Mission Health Services by Heather Reynolds. The simple answer, how and why nursing homes were originally created, continues to fuel this fear. A little over a century ago, if you needed a place to live because you were poor or disabled, you were sent to a poorhouse. Though poorhouses are documented as far back as the 1600s, the first documented poorhouse in America was 1731. Over time, people realized that some groups needed special care. Asylums were built to house the feeble-minded, epileptics, criminally insane, blind and deaf, and tuberculosis patients. These poorhouses were paid for through taxes and housed anyone type of a person, disabled, elderly, drunkards, paupers, criminally insane, and people born with cognitive disabilities. These homes were self-sustaining, where inmates were required to farm the land or care for the cattle. Inmates at poorhouse. These places were odious, filthy homes overrun by rats and bugs. When you moved in, you were separated from your spouse, placed in a bare room, and put to work. They were more lenient with the elderly, but you still had to work. Chances are you would die from infection, disease, or malnutrition. The superintendent was given authority to use reasonable and humane coercion as necessary. Some were temporary inmates, only there to heal from illness or injury. In the 1930s, there was an outcry on how the elderly disabled were being treated. Nearly all county poorhouses have some aged persons who show definite symptoms of mental deterioration and may be classified as senile insane. The question arises as to whether these persons are the responsibility of state institutions maintained for the care of those suffering from mental disorders or the responsibility of the counties. However, the senile insane should not be cared for in a poorhouse unless the institution is so arranged, equipped, and staffed that they can be segregated in comfortable quarters and can be given care suited to their needs. At the present time, few county poorhouses have either facilities adequate to care for the senile aged, apart from their other inmates or a staff which understands the care of mental patients. Patients suffering from mental disorders who are in need of treatment in hospitals for mental diseases should not be cared for in a poorhouse and should not be confused with the senile insane who only need custodial care. The inhumane treatment accorded many of the infirm and bedridden inmates in some poorhouses is almost unbelievable. When helpless, ill, feeble old men in one poorhouse were unable to take care of themselves, attendants placed them on chairs and bathed them by turning the hose on them. One nurse reported that when she was off duty one hot afternoon and evening, the bed patients were given no care during her absence, not even a drink of water. In 1935, as part of his New Deal, President Roosevelt enacted the Social Security Act, designed to help the elderly stay in their homes longer. An aid and grant program was created for those that did not qualify for Social Security but could not be used or received in an institutional setting. FDR was determined to close the institutions for good. The one thing he didn't take into consideration was that not all elderly could stay in their homes. So when did these homes start closing? This is where traditional nursing homes come into play. In the 1950s, modern medicine was a booming industry, and communities could not build hospitals quick enough. The doctors were the stars of the show, and patients felt comfortable getting their care. As the hospitals opened, the poorhouses sent their inmates to the hospitals, creating an overcrowding situation. Hospitals lobbied the government for grants to build attached structures to replace or to place patients needing long-term care. These wings were not created to care for people, but to dump them, sometimes referred to as park and die. Shortly after the government created rules for hospitals, they did not meet the current regulations, but there were loopholes for nursing homes. In the 1960s and 70s, nursing homes were cropping up all over the country, designed to care for the feeble-minded and frail population. The one area that was killing the elderly, the buildings themselves. The buildings were not designed with safety in mind, and many died from fires and infection. The federal government began to place stricter regulations designed to create a safer environment, but not for the actual care of the human being. In the 1970s and 80s, continued reports of neglect and abuse are being reported by family members of patients residing in these facilities. Infections, bed sores, boredom, loneliness, and physical neglect are reported. Nursing home staff could use restraints, physical or chemical, to subdue a resident in the name of their own safety. In 1987, the Nursing Home Reform Act was put into law. This list of regulations was created to help curb neglect, but focuses on the physical body, not the emotional well-being of the residents in their care. I should note that nursing homes are the second most regulated industry in America under nuclear power. Does this equate with improved quality of life? Traditional nursing home environments are considered smelly, cold, institutional, rigid scheduling, short-staffed, and completely clinically focused. When we focus completely on the physical body, we tend to treat them as human beings. Combine this human behavior with the lack of education and society's view on aging or ageism, our human tendency is to create a world where the resident loses control of their own lives. With that control, they lose their privacy, dignity, autonomy, and respect. Society's view on aging, that is, once you reach a certain age, well, you no longer have control. It is the continued stories of abuse and aggregation that continues to breed fear in the hearts of many in our aging population. The good news, the culture is changing. Organizations such as the Eden Alternative and Pioneer Network are pushing at the highest levels of government to create lasting change for those who need long-term care. Homes that practice culture change put the person's well-being first, creating care plans that are person-centered and person-directed. The family and the residents have complete involvement. Residents maintain the right to make choices for themselves, be members of committees and teams, and even participate in hiring staff. Culture change homes educate staff on the rights of residents making choices for themselves. When to go to bed, when to rise, when and what to eat, what to wear, and even what activities to do. Staff are educated on communicating effectively with residents with cognitive disabilities without the use of physical or chemical restraints. So what should you be looking for in a nursing home? Here are some ideas. Is the building home-like, and that means the institutional feeling is absent? Nursing stations should be removed. The home should be comfortable, have live plants, or even pets. How does it smell? A home smells like home, not chemicals. Look at the activities. Is there access to leisure items when the director is unavailable? Is the calendar rich in meaning, or are the events mainly bingo, sing-alongs, and movies? Is there continued and easy access for those living with dementia? Some homes do not have a dedicated memory care wing. Dementia residents are often overlooked in activities. If there is a dedicated memory care unit, are there opportunities for consistent engagement? Residents should not be wandering, aimless, bored. Are they parked in front of a TV? Are there rigid schedules? Do the residents have to be up at the same time for meals, or are they expected to go to bed early? What about the shower schedule? Do they have a choice of when to shower or bathe? Even if there's a schedule, the resident has the right to change it to meet their needs. Listen to the facility. Is there overhead paging? Call bells, crying residents, or rowdy staff? The staff should be wearing radios, call lights are silent, and staff should be handling the needs of the residents to keep them from calling out. How do people interact with each other? Are they friendly, or do they ignore each other as they pass? Do they talk to the residents, or do they ignore them? Remember, a beautiful building does not always create great care. A beautiful building can feel cold and institutional, while an older home could feel warm and homey. Take the time to tour on a weekend to see how people act. Oftentimes, the weekend staff let things go without leadership to guide them. Staff should be empowered to make decisions without a department head. And finally, check out the dining room. How does the food look, smell, taste? Our day revolves around food, and the dining experience is the center of our day, just like home. References were the study of Kansas Poor Farms, the Eden Alternative, and the Pioneer Network. Heather Reynolds is a nationally certified Alzheimer's dementia practitioner, trainer, and certified Eden educator. The Mission Health Services is a community-based nonprofit organization that provides services across the Wasatch Front and Wyoming. It's founded in 1990 to offer services and premier nonprofit organization of skilled nursing, rehabilitation, assisted living, and care for the intellectually disabled. Well, what to look for in a nursing home and communication when dealing with fears about aging are the two important takeaways from this article, as far as I'm concerned. So, thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for this show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.